VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Well, good afternoon. Vic Eliason here with Crosstalk, and we're grateful to be here. I've been away from the studios for a few days and up in the North Country where it was 12 below zero here last week, and glad to be back where it's warmer, 50-some degrees or close to it today, when a lot of that white stuff is melting. But again, we're looking forward to being in, that's right, Fort Scott, Kansas, coming up this Saturday night. And if you're in the driving distance from Fort Scott, we're planning to be there. Our special guest is Gary Kaw, speaking about the New World Order and some of the vital things. We're going to be having a very special time involving a lot of great music, you as well, and the roving mic with Jim Schneider, and we have the keyboard. We'll travel. It's going to be a lot of great time to be together, celebrating the 25th anniversary of KVCY in Fort Scott. So 25 years ago, wow, that seems like yesterday, but we're very grateful. Well, standing by with me on the line right now from Samaria is David Rubin. He's the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and that's in the region of Samaria, known to most of the world as the West Bank. He is the founder and president of Shiloh Israel Christian Children's Fund, Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, dedicated to easing the trauma of children who've been victimized with terrorist attacks, as well as rebuilding a biblical heartland for Israel. And David knows what it's like. He was involved in a very serious issue with terrorist attack as well, so he may tell us a little about that. But are talking today about the economy. While the economy still dominates the GOP race, embattled Israel and its enemies have clearly been the main foreign policy issue discussed on the campaign trail and even in the undeclared White House campaign room. Israeli political analyst and former Shiloh mayor David Rubin is with us. And David, it's always a privilege to have you join us today on Crosstalk.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you, Vic.
David, do you believe that the nation of Israel has taken an important role in the presidential campaign here in the United States?
Well, there's no question about it. You know, there's that old campaign slogan, it's the economy, stupid. Well, I would say it differently. I'd say it's Israel, stupid. And the reason I say that is because any time that foreign policy comes up, the discussion revolves around Israel. If we're talking about Israel, or we're talking about Israel's enemies, which are the Muslim neighbors that surround Israel, we're talking about Israel, and Israel comes up quite often in the news. There is no candidate that is neutral on Israel.
Now, the issue, as we have watched in recent months with President Obama, where he literally snubbed Prime Minister Netanyahu, I mean, literally walked off to dinner and left him sitting there. What in the world is going on?
Well, what's going on is that we had three years of a hostile Obama who was the worst, the most anti-Israel president of any president in American history. And just one statement after another, publicly threatening Israel, that it has to end all settlement activity, meaning banning Jews from the biblical heartland of Israel, and threatening Israel that it would have to freeze all Jewish building, of course allowing Muslim building, but all Jewish building would have to be frozen, not just in the biblical heartland of Samaria and Judea, which much of the world calls the West Bank, but also in Israel's capital, Jerusalem. So it was clear that there was a lot of hostility there for almost 3 years. And then all of a sudden, when the Republican candidates started running and with the notable exception of Ron Paul, making very positive statements about Israel. Then Obama realized, well, he better get on board, otherwise he's going to lose all the Jewish votes. And that's when he started speaking a different game and saying positive statements about Israel, and all of the threats now are in private.
Well, the issue again, and it was last week, we did a program, early last week, I believe it was, and we had one of Netanyahu's personal assistants of the past. He said he couldn't speak while he was in the employ of Israel, but as now retired, he was able to share some of his thoughts. And he referred to even the Six-Day War and all of the other efforts during the times when Israel had to take military action. And every time they did, they said the United States and others backed away and left them alone so that they had no support whatsoever.
Well, it's always been that way. Yes, it's true. The Six-Day War, there was no support from any other countries. Israel stood alone. We were truly the nation that stands alone in 1967, but we weren't standing alone because if it's permissible to say on this show, we had God with us, and it was just too clear because no country wins a war in 6 days, and then on the seventh day they rest because the seventh day was the Sabbath. And we recaptured the biblical heartland of Israel, of Samaria and Judea and eastern Jerusalem, and as well as the Golan Heights and Gaza, all in 6 days. Now, that doesn't happen too often in modern times.
It was a miracle, and when I think of the fact, and I fly a Cessna aircraft, so I know the functions of these aircraft, and I understand even during those days they were using Cessna aircraft at low altitude levels to achieve military achievements, which, again, is miraculous. These things weren't military airplanes, but they were necessary, and they used them.
We had the most, the greatest amount of hardcore secular Israelis in world history to be talking about miracles that occurred in those 6 days. It was just amazing.
We're talking, of course, about the issue of the importance of our relationship to Israel with the GOP. And the Republicans do not usually get a lot of Jewish American votes. Now, what are the differences between the GOP candidates in their positions on Israel and the Middle East?
Okay, well, first of all, we have Ron Paul, who I said stands out among the candidates because he is the only one that is not pro-Israel. In recent months, since the primary campaign started, he's been very careful not to make any of the statements that he's made in the past. For example, when Israel finally responded a couple of years ago to the rocket attacks that were coming from the Hamas terrorist organization and the Islamic Jihad terrorist organizations in Gaza, Israel finally responded, sent in the Israeli army to do the job, and one of the few American politicians who was on the news fiercely criticizing Israel was Ron Paul, and he accused Israel of creating, and I quote, kind of a concentration camp in Gaza. He said it on several occasions, so I know it wasn't a slip of the tongue. He knew exactly what he was saying, and to accuse the people that lost 6 million of their own people in the Holocaust to be creating a concentration camp of the so-called Palestinian Arab Muslims after having suffered from rocket attacks for several years with hardly any response, he knew exactly what he's talking about. And I could go through a long list of past statements from Ron Paul, not to mention his newsletters, his anti-Semitic newsletters. So Ron Paul, while he may speak speak very clearly and very sensibly when it comes to economics. When it comes to foreign policy, he seems to think that the world has suddenly gone clean and there are no more bad guys who want to destroy the free world. So jumping ahead to the other candidates, Mitt Romney, while he makes some positive statements about Israel, he talks about Israel being a true friend of the United States. He talks about Obama throwing Israel under the bus, but nothing really of substance, and he's very cautious. And when it comes to this fictional Arab-Muslim people that they call the Palestinians, he's very wary not to say anything that might turn anybody the wrong way. And he was even critical of Newt Gingrich, which of course brings us to Newt Gingrich, who spoke about the Palestinians as being an invented people, which was a very accurate historical statement, because there was never a sovereign nation in the Middle East, a sovereign nation consisting of Arab Muslims and calling themselves Palestinians. There never was such a nation in the Middle East, and they have absolutely no right to such a nation. And by their embracing of terrorism, they certainly have lost whatever right they may have had, if somebody believes that they ever had one. So Newt Gingrich has shown that he has a clear grasp and understanding, historical understanding, of the Middle East and of Israel's situation. And Rick Santorum as well has made some very clear, strong statements about Israel, about the importance of standing with Israel and the importance of standing with Israel as far as the biblical heartland goes, that there is absolutely no reason on earth that Israel should be giving away its biblical heartland, which it won in a defensive war, to a terrorist entity.
Now, isn't Israel also an important issue for the Democrats now? You mentioned that the president suddenly has changed his rhetoric. Any other feedback from that field?
Well, most of the supporters of Israel in the United States are not Jewish. And you know, some people, you know, haven't noticed that the Christian population in the United States is becoming increasingly pro-Israel, and standing with Israel is becoming a litmus test up there with being anti-gay marriage and anti-abortion. The issue of Israel is becoming a very important litmus test in conservative circles.
Now, again, I know that there's a dividing line which we face, and we may talk about this here. We're coming up on a break here shortly. But talking about the religious Jews and the liberal Jews, defining, because I think this is a defining moment, and we can talk about this. Maybe you can share something about that as well. And welcome back to Crosstalk. During the break, I was just chatting with David for a moment. And David, we were talking about a very controversial individual. Meir Kahane, some years ago, was a guest on my program. And I remember he was saying to, I had said, what's your final message? As we signed off the show, I said, what's your final message to the Christians? He says, pray for the peace of Israel. And then I said, what's your final message to the Jews? He said, be Jewish, not Israeli. And a week later, he was shot and killed in New York as he was delivering a message there. But I'll never forget that statement, be Jewish, not Israeli. Define.
Yeah, well, that is, he really hit it on the head, as he did very often. And in addition to being quite the visionary when it came to talking about the Islamic threat to the demographic threat to Western civilization. And well, he spoke specifically about Israel, not about Western civilization. I spoke about Western civilization in my book, The Islamic Tsunami. Mm-hmm. But he he was ahead of his time, and that statement about being Jewish, not Israeli, was very apropos, because in Israel, as in America, there is a cultural struggle between those who want Israel to be some sort of secular replica of Europe, and those who want Israel to be true to its biblical heritage. And so a lot of the reasons why Israel very often makes the wrong decisions, or seems to be doing foolish things like giving away pieces of land of a country that's barely the size of New Jersey to terrorists, it comes from that lack of Jewish biblical connection. And I always say we have to get biblically connected again. And I say that to Jews in Israel, and I say that to Americans as well. Because if we get biblically connected again, and that doesn't mean just going to church or just going to synagogue. It means getting biblically connected, connected to the Bible, connected to our the core and the roots of our civilizations, of our respective civilizations, I should say.
Is it true what the Obama administration is now saying, that he, Barack Obama, is the most pro-Israel president in recent years?
Oh, come on. You can't really mean that.
He said that. He actually said that.
I know he said that. I know that that some of his spokesmen have been saying that. I guess it's like anything, like any commercial on television. If you say it enough, people will start to believe it, or start to consider the possibility that it might be true. No, he has been the most hostile president in American history towards Israel. He's the pressure that he has put on Israel to give in and concede as the rockets are falling on Israeli cities. It's just absurd. It's just scandalous that any person would believe that this is a pro-Israel president.
In a recent commentary on the campaign, Sarah Palin said that America is blessed by standing with Israel. What do you think she meant by that?
Well, Sarah Palin is another one of those public figures that often gets ridiculed by using, because she might use the G word on occasion, G meaning God, not gay.
Right.
which of course is forbidden to justify a position by citing God. Well, what she is referring to is a deep religious belief that conservative people and religious people across the United States have, which is that there is a Bible that is true, that was given to the Jewish people, to Moses on Mount Sinai, several thousands of years ago, and he gave it to Moses for the Jewish people to be a light unto the nations. Now, what does it say in the beginning of that Bible? It says in Genesis, the first book of the Bible, book of Genesis, chapter 12, verse 3, it says, and I will bless those that bless you, and those who curse you, I will curse. And he's talking to Israel. He's talking to the father of Israel, Abraham, and he's saying to him that he will bless those who bless Israel. Well, that's what Sarah Palin was referring to. And those who have blessed Israel over the years have been blessed. If you just compare the United States and the former Soviet Union or Russia, and how it's treated its Jews, the Jews that have lived in the respective countries, and you will see how the United States thrived over the years, and how the Soviet Union and Russia have always had their struggles economically and in every other way, and infighting and minor civil wars. The Soviet Union and Russia have never had any sort of internal peace, but the United States has, and it's only in recent years, since the United States has been turning away from Israel and pushing this Palestinian state idea and supporting terrorists, that is the point at which the United States started turning away from Israel, and I think we see it in the economy today.
Now, the question I have here, and it's kind of a complex, but I'm going to give it to you this way. Is the Iranian nuclear threat as great as Israel seems to think it is? And if it is, you're in Israel. Are there any signs that Israel will take action against Iran? And if so, when? That's a big triple question.
Yeah, well, let's start with the first part. Israel has known for many years that the Iranians are working on nuclear weapons, that they have a very comprehensive nuclear program to create nuclear weapons, to create the nuclear bomb, and to destroy Israel with it. They've made that very clear in their private actions and in their public statements. And we in Israel, a nation that, as I've said, the size of New Jersey, that includes the West Bank, by the way, which is a country that is built on the ashes of the Holocaust, we cannot afford, we don't have the luxury of ignoring when somebody privately is working to destroy us and publicly is stating that they wish to destroy us. We just can't play that game. Yes, we know it's true, and in the year 2007, the CIA came out with a statement that that it wasn't true, that it apparently is a peaceful nuclear program. Israel did not believe it for a minute, and the recent report by the International Atomic Energy Agency, their recent report has revealed very clearly that, indeed, Iran is engaged in a mad nuclear race to develop those nuclear weapons that will be able to destroy Israel. So we can't play games here, and we cannot afford to look the other way. And despite what everyone is saying today, all the political leaders that are afraid of their own skin because they're afraid that perhaps their oil might get cut off, so guys like Sarkozy in France, whose oil apparently was just cut off by Iran, they're so afraid that they're threatening Israel, that Israel should not attack, that there is no military solution to the Iranian nuclear program, that there is only diplomatic solutions and the use of sanctions. Well, the truth is the opposite. The truth is that there is only a military solution, and that somebody is going to have to hit Iran before too long, and it's going to have to hit them hard.
You think it's going to happen soon? Your thoughts?
I think we're coming very close to the breaking point. They are very, very close. Intelligence estimates here in Israel say that they are within several months of having the nuclear bomb.
You know, what about those 200,000? I mean, people say if Israel takes action, good grief. Let me just ask you this, folks, here. If someone, a predator, says, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to destroy you, I'm going to destroy your family, I'm going to kill everybody connected with you. And this is a lethal threat in this country. Even if you say those words and don't do it, you can still be apprehended, because it's a threat. But here on a national scene, we see, here we have Iran saying that Israel belongs in the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea, and has said that their stated goal is to destroy Israel. Now, David, what about those 200,000 missiles aimed at Israel from all sides and the internal terrorist threat from the West Bank? What about this?
Well, you accurately cited the Israeli intelligence report that recently came out, which states very clearly that about 200,000 missiles are being pointed at us from the Hamas and Islamic Jihad terrorist organizations in Gaza, and from the Hezbollah terrorist organization in Lebanon, and of course from Iran and Syria, and all of these countries are just waiting, chafing at the bit, waiting to destroy Israel with those missiles. They're waiting for the right moment. So yes, we're not just talking about an Iranian nuclear threat. We are talking from a missile threat from all of these terrorist organizations and nations as well that surround us.
And at the same time today, the big word is out that our president here wants to reduce our nuclear warheads from 1,500 down to 300.
Well, I don't think that President Obama truly has the interests of America at heart. It just seems too clear to me that that this president I've written about this extensively in the Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama, that this president represents the strange kind of collusion between the Islamic ideologues, which hate Judeo-Christian civilization, and the leftist secular ideologues, who also hate Judeo-Christian civilization. And I believe very strongly that Obama himself hates Judeo-Christian civilization. He would never say that publicly because he would be bound to lose a tremendous amount of votes. But it seems clear from his actions, from what you decided, to his statements to the head of NASA when he came into office, that one of the main goals of NASA is to make the Islamic world feel good about its accomplishments in math and science, to so many other statements.
We're going to be right back in 60 seconds. And welcome back to Crosstalk, where we're visiting today with David Rubin, who is speaking to us from Samaria, Israel. And we're talking about the conditions of what's looking pretty ominous with Iran and their plans to obviously obtain a nuclear weapon. We're hearing, of course, about the efforts of our own country to reduce our nuclear arsenal. And, of course, you're hearing all kinds of issues, even regarding the stands of various candidates for president and their attitude toward Israel. There are contrasts for sure. But let me also just say this. As we take our phone calls today, and this is an advice to every person who calls, you need to be aware. We've had people who've called and been abusive on the air. And we do have a register of every incoming call on what we call caller ID. Last time, I think, David, you were on or someone else was on, and the individual called and was a Jew hater and obvious said some very radical and racist things. And we will document. We have your phone number if you abuse. Other than that, it's simply a documentation. People who have no ulterior motives have nothing to fear. Your phone numbers never leave here. But if someone is abusive and involved with hate speech, we will deal with that. So with that notice, we're going to take our phone calls. Our telephone number, 800-733-9829. 800-733-9829. If you'd like to talk with our guest, David Rubin. And David, before we go further to take the calls, I wonder if you would tell us about that book that you've written, where people can get it, because it certainly paints the picture for people to understand world conditions.
Yes, well, the Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama, that's the subtitle. But the Islamic Tsunami is the name of the book. And Well, it speaks of the Islamic threat to Judeo-Christian civilization and to the United States and to Israel, and the importance of Israel and the United States locking arms, standing together in these times to confront that threat. And it's actually a dual threat, as I just described, which is epitomized in President Obama, which is the threat from the Islamic ideologues, the threat from the secular leftists, and the threat to the United States and Israel specifically. I mean, President Obama he would never say it publicly, of course, but he is not a lover of Israel, and I don't think he's a lover of the United States either. You know, he's never said that publicly. His wife has, but I think it's very clear that the United States and Israel need to be standing together in these times, and especially in these times.
We're going to go right now to Mobile, Alabama, and talk with Earl. Earl, you're on the air with our guest, David Rubin.
Hey, how you doing today?
Fine, sir.
Okay.
Y'all are Bible scholars. Now, I'm not. I don't read too good. I just have CDs and I listen to. But ain't it in there where the Bible says when the nations turn against Israel, that when Jesus will appear and help the Israel and the Jewish people out?
I think the Bible speaks, especially in the book of Revelation, and it talks about, and I'm speaking about our Bible, it is one that talks about Gog and Magog. There are references there which would lead us to believe that the armies of the north, the big bear out of the north, could well be the predator that may attack Israel. There are many studies on prophecy today which are of great interest. David, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, we have that as well in what Christians would call the Old Testament and in the writings of the prophets, and where it talks about what we would call in Hebrew Gog and Magog, where it talks about the nations coming against Israel and God standing with Israel. It's very clear.
Thank you very much for the call. We're moving right ahead to Lake Delton, Wisconsin. And, Carl, you're on the air. Carl, please turn your radio down, okay?
Yes, it's down.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, as the book, As America Does to Israel, conclusively shows that if we go with Israel, we will be blessed. If we don't, we will be condemned. And that book goes on 60 or 70 times to show that when the U.S. goes against Israel, how we get spanked for it, like the Gaza Strip. When the last Israeli took his foot out of the Gaza Strip, within 24 hours, Hurricane Katrina hit. And this book goes on to exhaustively show that when we go against Israel, we will be spanked. And, boy, somebody should put that book in Obama's hands. I'm sure he probably wouldn't read it, but at any rate, it's we have to go with Israel. If we don't, we will be condemned.
Thank you so much, Carl. That book, As America Has Done to Israel, I tell you, is a power. I don't know if you've seen that one, David, but it out.
Oh, sure. It's I actually quoted from that book in the Islamic Tsunami in my section, chapter 9 of the Islamic Tsunami, which is called Those Who Bless Israel. Speaks about all of this and that comparison between the United States and the former Soviet Union was taken straight from that book.
Well, even as we see what happened to some of our presidential property there, Kenny Bunkport got a terrible lashing of water damage within hours after a decision was made or a statement was made that was not complimentary to Israel. There have been others. We've seen, as we say, the hurricanes and the things that happen within a very short period of time. And these are national disasters, natural disasters, that are termed by insurance companies as acts of God. Maybe God's trying to say something to us.
Yep. Well, we don't believe that in Judaism, we don't believe that there are coincidences, that everything happens for a specific reason, and there are spiritual ramifications for everything that we do in this world.
Stevens Point, Adam. Adam, you're on the air.
sir.
You go ahead, sir. You're on the air.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I have a threefold question here. I'll make it quick. One is you're talking about blessing Israel. We understand that no people in Israel are living perfect lives by any means. They have their share of sins that they're doing even right now. So what does blessing Israel look like? Because we're not for their sins. And as America, what can we do practically? You might have already talked about this, so please forgive me. I'm catching you at the end here. Number two is I have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old. So they don't understand this, apocalyptic stuff. And me as a parent, I don't want to live in fear. How can I? Do we leave? Do we move to a different country? And kind of based on that scripture, he who does not provide for his own is worse than an infidel. I'm required to provide. That word provide is a big word for me as a parent. Now
that would even include protect, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so that's a big word. And by the way, my son's name is Isaiah. He's listening right now, and Isaiah was a prophet, you know. And so my son is only 3 right now. So what can I do to? He doesn't understand all this apocalyptic. It might even happen tomorrow, for all we know. And for a 3-year-old, how do I tell him, hey, it's going to be okay? Or how my 4-year-old, it's going to be okay? Well, really, it's not, because the Bible says it's going to get worse before it gets better. And then, do we move to a different country? So I got, and then one last one is based on. Doesn't it say about the sons returning to the fathers, or the fathers' hearts returning to the children somewhere in there? And yet, the Bible also says that mother will go against daughter, and in the last days, father. I want to get that right, but there's some bad things that are going to happen within families. And yet, it says something about fathers' hearts returning to their children's, or children's hearts returning to their fathers.
Adam, let's pick it up there, and David, if you'd like to respond.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay, well, there are basically 4 parts to that. Okay, first of all, how to bless Israel. There are very practical ways of how to bless Israel, how to stand with Israel in these times, and it starts for those who feel that spiritual connection. Then pray for Israel, pray for the biblical heartland of Israel, and pray for the United States to stand with Israel in biblically consistent ways. And that is number one. Number two, be politically involved. Get involved and make Israel a litmus test for the presidential candidates and for every candidate for Congress. Make it clear that you want them standing with Israel, not pressuring Israel to give away land, from this tiny country, and encourage Israel to stand strong against the Islamic terrorists. Next, the question about given everything that's going on today and all of the threats that we're speaking about, and you spoke of your responsibility as parents and relating to your 3-year-old and protecting your 3-year-old, your children. I know about protecting a 3-year-old. My son and I, who was then 3 years old, were shot at by terrorists when we were coming back from Jerusalem in our car 10 years ago. And I felt like I was helpless to protect him. I was shot in the leg. He was shot in the head. Well, praise God, we survived. We miraculously survived that terrorist attack. And I'm just giving you a condensed version. I wrote the full miraculous story in both of my books. But the fact is that when you have a 3-year-old, you can't expect the 3-year-old to understand what's going on. But my son, who is now 13 years old, understands the miracles that we experienced, and he also understands that you have to stand strong for what you believe in. And stand with your beliefs and not compromise when it comes to fundamental beliefs. And as far as moving to another country, look, the United States and Israel are the two bastions of Western civilization, of Judeo-Christian civilization, And I think that it is critical that the United States win this struggle for Judeo-Christian civilization. Europe is already on the way out. Europe is I refer to it as post-Christian Europe. But the United States, there is still hope, and the United States being built on those biblical foundations that are rooted in the Hebrew Bible, the United States still has a vital, vital role to play. I encourage you to teach that to your children and pass it along to the next generation.
Thank you, David. Also a word reminding, if our trust is in God, we seek His protection as well. And as we think of God and His great care for us, and as Christians, we consider Christ as the great shepherd, and the shepherd watches over his sheep. And the Psalm of David, Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And in the shadow of death we will fear no evil." We'll be right back. This is Crosstalk. And welcome back to Crosstalk. Why all eyes are on Israel today, and we're seeing it happen. We're looking at the political spectrum. We're looking at the issue of defense and threats, atomic threats. Isn't it interesting that a little piece of ground, as small as Israel is, can draw the attention of an entire world? Tell me that there isn't some biblical significance and some reason that the forces of evil would seek to snuff out the existence of Israel. And as the scriptures have been quoted, even those that bless Israel will be blessed, and those that curse Israel will be cursed. David, before we go further, I know you have a website. I'm sure folk would be, and again, where people can get your book.
Well, we actually have two websites. There's the IslamicTsunami.com, IslamicTsunami.com, which is, of course, the name of my latest book. So they can get a lot of information on there. And if they want to get the Islamic Tsunami, the best way to get the Islamic Tsunami is by going on Amazon.com and just ordering it directly from there. The Islamic Tsunami on Amazon.com, and if somebody doesn't have a computer for whatever reason, they can just dial a number 24 hours. You can even dial the number if you have a computer, 1-800-431-1579, 1-800-431-1579. You just tell them you want the Islamic Tsunami by David Rubin. Or Amazon.com, and the other website is the website of the organization that I started, the nonprofit organization that I started, which, by the way, is accepts tax exempt donations in the United States, and it's called the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, and the website is www.shilohisraelchildren.org. ShilohIsraelChildren.org.
An organization easing the trauma of children who've been victims of terrorist attacks. We're going to go back to our phones, which are really ringing here. Ron in Pennsylvania. Ron, thanks for being so patient. You're on the air.
Okay, David, I have a master's degree in history, and I read everything I could about your 1948 war, your 67 war, and your 73 war against outstanding odds, and you survived, and that was great. And my question actually has two parts. After the Camp David Accords, Israel got the most foreign aid from the United States, about $5 billion a year, and Egypt got $4 billion. And I wonder, has our president cut that back? And two, what other nations provide foreign aid to Israel, which to me would also show support support for your continued survival?
Good questions.
Okay, well, Israel doesn't get foreign aid from other countries, and the figure is actually worth $3 billion and $2 billion, which was after the Camp David Accords were signed with Egypt. And so the president at the time, who was Jimmy Carter, decided that Egypt needed to get support that was very close to the amount of support that Israel was getting. And that's basically how he bribed them to agree to a peace treaty. The reality today is that the aid that Israel is receiving has been greatly reduced. Israel is not receiving any economic aid anymore from the United States, and that was a mutual decision because the Israeli economy, thank God, has developed nicely over the years after serious economic problems some years ago. But the thing that I think we need to take note of is what does the United States get in return? And well, for one thing, all of the military purchases are from American companies, which certainly helps the American economy. But of course, the other things that stand out, aside from the spiritual factors that we've been speaking about tonight, today, the intelligence that the United States has gained from Israeli intelligence is just tremendous and has saved many American lives. So I think it's important to take note of that. One problem that we have today is that the tremendous amount of military and economic aid going to Egypt is now in the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is one of the most hostile forces, not just towards Israel, but towards Western civilization.
One of the things, and we're coming right down the home stretch here, and I won't be able to pick up Dan. I apologize. You're on the road in Wisconsin, Chris in Florida, and Eugene in Michigan. I'm sorry we will not be able to get to you because we're just moments away from the end of the program. Thank you, though, for calling. Just want to say this as we look here in America and we see the infusion of Islamic efforts to have Islamic law recognized, Sharia law. When we see mosques being built right here in our own community, another effort to build a huge $700,000 mosque in one of our suburbs now, becoming a major issue. And we need to be aware as Americans to speak when we can speak and to share our views. And we need to pray for our country as well as for Israel. I want to say, David, thank you so much for sharing with us your long standings and as the mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and also your verbal information, which is so important, and we're just very grateful for this as well.
Well, thank you. It was great to be on your show. I appreciate it, and God bless you and all of your listeners.
Thank you so much, David, and again to our listeners all across the country. Thank you for sharing with us today. And tell a friend about Crosstalk and invite them to listen every day at 2 p.m. Central here on the VCY American Network. If they don't have a radio service near them, you can go to the Internet and contact vcyamerica.org. Click on Listen on Live, and you can be a part of the listening and calling audience as well. Thanks again, David, for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thanks for joining us, David, with us about 9 o'clock at night there in Israel. And,